From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on January 25th, 2013, when the U.S. Department of Education issued a landmark directive for student athletes with disabilities. The Washington Post called it a moment that would stand alongside Title IX, which changed the landscape for female athletes. The new federal directive detailed how schools are now bound by federal law to ensure that students with disabilities are given equal opportunities to compete in school athletics. This change was the product of years of advocacy, as the Washington Post reported. Hard work from people involved with Special Olympics, for example, inclusive athletics, advocates, parents. Well, nearly 6 years later, let's take a look to see how the law is playing out. In New York State, there are 785 high schools. Only 140 currently offer inclusive athletics, opportunities for students with disabilities. That's about 18%. Advocates say that when you talk to school administrators, often they tend to say that inclusive athletics is a nice idea, something to be admired if you can do it. They don't view it as a requirement across the board yet. Well, how to change that? And furthermore, what is the impact of inclusive athletics? What is the impact of health, wellness, fitness year-round? Special Olympics leaders are in Rochester working with schools and coaches this week. Their goal is to make change in several ways, helping schools understand the need to get up to speed with federal requirements. But no one wants schools to feel forced to do this. They want schools to see the value and incorporate inclusive fitness, athletics, health on their own. So there's a lot to talk about this hour, and I'd like to welcome our guest now. Kyle Washburn is Director of Fitness for Special Olympics International. Great to have you in Rochester. Nice to have you here on the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also with us is Nathan Johnson, Senior Director of Programs for Unified Sports of Special Olympics New York. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having us, Evan.
And with us is Dr. Leslie Myers, Superintendent of the Brockport Central School District. Dr. Myers, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much.
And Jacob Boer-Babcock is an athlete, right?
Yes, I am.
You gave me a fist bump there. An athlete, a student where?
Yeah, Brockport.
Very good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I want to start with Nathan Johnson, just kind of give us the overview of what's really happening right now in Rochester. These days this week, you've got a chance to train coaches, get schools involved here. What are the goals here?
Yes, absolutely. So we want to bring about greater awareness and provide schools and our community with opportunities to promote inclusive programming, to leverage Special Olympics programming to build more inclusive school cultures, more inclusive school climates, as well as inclusion in the greater community. So over the next 2 days, we have a meeting with district administrators to talk about striving to become a unified champion banner school. There are a set of standards that were created by education and Special Olympics leaders nationally to recognize the mark of a truly inclusive school environment. So we're talking about that later this afternoon with school administrators. And then we have our annual regional coaches conference, where we have coaches who are school-based coaches as well as community-based coaches who are coming to learn the best practices as it relates to coaching Special Olympics, but also as it relates to inclusive programming, so creating connections with our athletes and the community, and then additionally fitness and all that's held within fitness, so nutrition, physical activities, and just sort of healthy living.
So I want to just be honest about my own ignorance about something right out of the gate here, and help maybe our guests can help me understand, because I had a conversation with the people over at the Golisano Foundation this morning, where some of the data comes from, some of the numbers. 785 New York high schools, only 140 are currently offering inclusive athletics, and I don't really get why that's allowed or why that hasn't changed, especially if you look at Title IX. I think my historical understanding was probably wrong. You know, Nathan, I would have told you, well, Title IX changed everything. And if you look at history, the answer was it has, but in the early years, it was the same kind of response. Well, we're working on female athletics, or if we can, as opposed to saying, hey, there are certain things you have to do now. But how do we have a landscape almost 6 years after this U.S. Department of Education directive where so many high schools, so many middle schools in New York State don't offer these kind of athletics or these opportunities for students with disabilities? Why is that okay?
Well, I think that the The directive or the law as it reads allows a lot of opportunities that are easy outs. So if there are opportunities for students with disabilities to try out for a traditional interscholastic team, then they are quote unquote in compliance with the spirit of what the law is. But when we have visionary leaders in education like Dr. Myers, when we have great partners like the Golisano Foundation that are pushing this idea for the idea of meaningful inclusion, that's when we are able to truly leverage what our Unified Champion School program is all about. So it's about creating meaningful opportunities for individuals like Jacob to play meaningful roles on sports teams within their school, but also the greater inclusion that results from that recognition on the sports team. So the inclusion that occurs in the hallway, on the school buses, in the cafeteria.
Yeah, and we will get to, eventually this hour, an important part of this discussion, which is the fact that the level of competition surprises a lot of people. In fact, I was told this morning, Tom Golisano himself went out to a local district to watch inclusive sports and came back and said, the level of play is really high. And we're going to get to that coming up here. But I take the point, Nathan, that technically many districts could say they're in compliance, that anybody can try out. That doesn't, to me, feel like it's in the spirit of the law.
Fair enough. I would agree with you 100%. I would say that we have an opportunity that schools can engage in to have a solution for this problem. And I think that from school administrators, from parents, coaches, teachers, what we have heard back is what the result out of participating in Unified Champion Schools is so much greater than the investment that they have to make in terms of the funding to support the program.
Okay. Well, let me bring in Kyle Washburn. Thoughts on this. Eventually, will this directive look like Title IX to us, and we're going to say we have true inclusion, and it started at that point?
I think that it will. One thing I can say that we're learning through Special Olympics is we have a center for inclusion, and within all systems, we are trying to promote and allow for more inclusion in different opportunities. And when we look at the school system, it's similar with different industries, if you will, that many individuals want to do this. They want to be inclusive. They want to have unified activities and programming, but they're coming to us and saying, well, what do we do? What are the opportunities? What are the first steps that we can do besides the example you gave of, okay, everybody can try out for this sport? Somewhat of a step, but it doesn't really get to the spirit of what inclusion is. And that's why we have programming, whether it's fitness or wellness programming or our Unified Champion Schools, to really provide some frameworks and some models that, one, align with national school standards and create easier opportunities for youth with and without intellectual disabilities to come together to be advocates and leaders in their own schools, to provide trainings for school administrators, teachers, and leaders. Because what we find is once you provide those trainings, you provide those resources, and you provide that information, it becomes second nature. It becomes easier to do versus saying, well, what is that first step? So Special Olympics is leading that way with the support of the Golisano Foundation, with the funding we get from the Department of Education or the CDC, to create those resources and documents so that when we look back, and hopefully we look back very soon, that it's similar to Title IX, where it's something that we do, that it's inclusive, it is mainstream, it's something that we do, and inclusion is a part of everything that we do in the school system and kind of anywhere, employment, human rights.
So do you meet a lot of school administrators, a lot of coaches who will tell you, we do want to do this, we don't necessarily know how right out of the gate. Help us see how to do this.
I think that's one of the first steps. You've got people that see the value, they recognize the value, they choose professions that draw them to inclusion opportunities, but saying, what do I do? At the same time, when we look at healthcare providers, I think we could extend that to educators, is saying we at times don't have a lot of opportunities to engage with people of different abilities. And therefore, unless you're an adapted physical activity or education expert, you don't have a lot of opportunities to engage. And once we've trained and allowed for individuals to engage and interact with people with an intellectual disability or any ability, they recognize it's not that difficult, it's not that challenging, it's really empowering, and I'm on board, and now I know what to do, and now I know how to help other people get involved, so you don't have to be only that one champion advocating for that in your school, in your system.
And that's probably a culture change, I imagine, Kyle, because you get administrators, you get coaches who see that it's easier than I thought, that we can do this, here's how we do it. And then the culture probably trickles down, that inclusion becomes something I think that Nathan mentioned. It's part of, it happens in the hallways. It doesn't just happen on an athletic field, yeah?
Oh, exactly, exactly. I mean, I think that's the ultimate goal, and it's within our reaches. We've seen that happen in healthcare systems, and we know that it's working in the school systems as well. So it's just another setting, another environment where we can promote inclusion.
All right, well, I want to talk to Dr. Myers about how she views this as an administrator. How do you view the importance of athletic inclusion as it relates to what Special Olympics and what these related programs are asking districts to do versus sort of the bare minimum that, well, everybody can try out and, mm-hmm. you know, you sort of wash your hands of it. How do you view that?
I think it's similar to the conversation that we've had relative to race and the importance of diversity or going to Title IX of making sure that gender is equally represented. When we were approached with this idea almost 5 years ago, without hesitation, Brockport said, absolutely, we're going to move forward in this direction. And while we had concerns about how are we going to make sure that we have enough coaches, enough involved, or will we even get enough players, everything that we were kind of cautiously optimistic about flipped. We had 23 players come out the first year to try out. We had more than a coach. I think we had three coaches who wanted to be involved. Our board was unanimously very supportive of this. And so when we talk about making sure that each child feels like they're supported, each child feels like they're included, this is one way that we can approach it. And what I love is that while athletics is the springboard for us to do this, it has completely, I'm not saying this, I'm not making any underestimations, it has completely transformed our school culture. So it starts on the basketball court, but we see lifelong friendships that have been established. We see where certain students now are getting invited to go to prom and other social events. We see where students are standing up for one another. And, you know, that is incredibly powerful because every single school's mission and vision statements talks about preparing kids to be kind, you know, to prepare them for a global society. And it has just been amazing to watch this, to have parents come up to me and say, Dr. Myers, I never thought that my child would get to wear a uniform that said Brockport Central School District on it. And going to your comment, Evan, about the competitive play, mm-hmm. it is incredibly competitive. And that's what I think is so important, too. People sometimes might think that there might be an IEP applied to this or that we reduce the skill or that it's not as high level. You know, the drills that our coaches are teaching are very high level. The play is very high level. And I think that's the other important thing that this program does. It helps to break stereotypes and stigmas that people hold about individuals with disabilities. And that occurs not only student to student, but adult to student and community to student. And so that's why I say it's so incredibly transformational to see when you go full forward and you have both top-down and bottom-up support for a program. This is a regular part of our framework in Brockport.
Let's talk to Jacob about that. Jacob Boer Babcock is an athlete. And again, what grade are you in, sir?
I actually graduated from Brockport High School 2014.
Oh, graduating 2014. Okay, so excellent. And you can talk about your experience with this. So let's have a conversation about your athletic goals and what you've been able to do.
All right. First of all, for Unified Sports, when I first started Unified Sports, it was a great opportunity mm-hmm. for me to play basketball and helping teammates out. And it was basically, how do I say this? It's basically helping people get into the community and helping.
Just to provide a little context for Jacob's high school sports experience. Jacob was also on the wrestling team. So why don't you tell him a little bit about being on the wrestling team?
Well, 2014, I started wrestling my junior year, mm-hmm. and I wasn't very good. So basically, my coach, Mike Ferris, he was my wrestling coach for Brockport. And he told me that that I know I don't get it. I didn't get a lot of matches, so I didn't wasn't very good. But that he said that was okay. So I mean, all you can do is try your best. And so basically, I talked to Todd Haygreen, and he said that I wanted to be on the basketball team for the Brockport High School. And he said that, unfortunately, I can't really play for the Brockport basketball varsity team because I was not I was graduated already. So basically, I had to, like, talk to Todd Haygreen about this. He said there's a program called Unified Sports, and he basically said that it would be a good opportunity for me to play basketball for the Unified team. So I was on there for maybe 1 year or two.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really good. So it was a great community for me to play basketball, and it was a great sport for me. So basically, basketball is like my favorite sport to play. So,
and Jacob's being modest, but he's the 3-point
shooter.
Champion shooter, and he was very direct in reminding me that he beat me when I was the guest coach when we played horse.
Yeah, that was a funny moment, but it was good though. It was fun.
So one of the important pieces I think about Jacob's story about participating in high school sports, I think it reflects a great piece about the culture that exists at Brockport prior to Unified. So Jacob was included on the wrestling team. To his own admission, he wasn't a very good wrestler, and so he wasn't getting meaningful experience out of it. But the coach appreciated the work ethic. Jacob shows up to practice. He puts the work in. He just wasn't that top-level wrestler who was going to get the call for the match. So while he still put all the effort in, he didn't get necessarily that meaningful participation. And his role, like Dr. Myers had said, on the Unified Sports team, Jacob was a starter. He was a key piece of that team, its success. They won as a team, they lost as a team, but Jacob was considered a leader. And that's kind of the difference that Unified Sports or inclusive sports can bring to an overall interscholastic program. Is for Jacob, he still was going to wrestle on that wrestling team, and he wanted to have that experience. But also, this was a chance for him to provide more meaningfully to the success of the team.
And by the way, as a 3-point leader, you said, for your team, did you grow up playing a lot of basketball? Because I know you said you had wrestled for Brockport before you moved over to basketball as an inclusive level. But did you play much basketball growing up?
Yes, I played for the Sweden Clarkson Recreation Center, which is located in Brockport. And basically, I think I was probably, I don't know how old I was, probably 8 years old when I started playing basketball. And I've grown up to be more. I tried my best. I tried working hard, like just like LeBron. You keep striving to be great, and just basically that's when I started playing basketball. I was probably 8 years old. So
if I gave you 10 shots right now from the top of the key, how many are you gonna knock down?
Probably, if you just keep passing me the ball, probably like 10, 15 maybe.
Oh yeah. you had no problem knocking them down still.
No, not really. I'm pretty good, so.
the level of competition, Nathan, I think is important to kind of touch on here, because let's be blunt. I think there are probably some either misunderstandings or stereotypes about what inclusive athletics might look like. And I want to explore where reality and stereotypes sort of like separate here. How do you see that?
Absolutely. So within Unified Sports especially, and Special Olympics sports in general, it's very important that people understand that the rules are being followed. Typically, we follow a national governing body, or in the case of Special Olympics World Games, an international governing body. And that is a key piece, specifically to destroy those stereotypes and stigmas and prejudices that exist about people with intellectual disabilities. There have been studies about Special Olympics brand recognition, and we're a very recognizable brand, but we're also a very misunderstood brand. People do see us as the nice thing that happens once a year for people with intellectual disabilities, but we are a year-round, global, day-to-day movement that advocates for opportunities mostly in athletics for people with intellectual disabilities, but also beyond that, to Kyle's point about working with healthcare, working in fitness, working in early childhood intervention. We have strategies and we have programs that fit all these things. But to the point about competition, I think that one of the wonderful things about inclusive sports is when we get to typically developing students, general education students, and we explain what this program is about, they inherently understand the idea that if what they're doing isn't seen as legitimate and credible, that they are creating misunderstanding, mm-hmm. that they're perpetuating mm-hmm. a stereotype. And so really a lot of those student leaders who are on the team are important and vital to making this an authentic, incredible experience.
Yeah, you're
Could I just add to that,
please
though?
Do.
What I at least see on our team, and you see it on a few other teams, though, is that certainly it's competitive and the goal is for your team to win. But what's been so transformational in Brockport is that our student leaders have worked very hard to ensure that our students with intellectual disabilities get the ball more often, right? So they have that opportunity to shoot. So they'll create some of those opportunities that instead of always going to a student leader, that it will go to a student with intellectual disabilities. And even though they may have an easier two-point shot or a three-point shot, they will make sure that our students are fully included in the game.
And the students who are in there,
yes.
like here with Jacob, are knocking shots down.
Yes. I mean,
this is go ahead.
They are.
I think there's a common misconception as well that a person with an intellectual disability is sort of a hindrance to the team, mm-hmm. that they're not going to be the superstar. And Jacob epitomizes that. He was the leading three-point shooter, and mm-hmm. it wasn't because the other teams weren't going to guard him or mm-hmm. they were going to play him less competitively. I mean, we have athletes in the organization that are achieving times and results in competitions that are on par with Olympians, that college champions. And it's really important to note that the levels and the abilities of people with an intellectual mm-hmm. disability are on par, if not superseding those. And that's not across the board, but we want to break down those misconceptions. And mm-hmm. we see that in schools with youth leaders and engaging and working with each other and saying, I'm getting a lot more out of this, I think, than the individual with an intellectual disability
Absolutely.
Is getting from the experiences, but also we're winning more, you know, and it's not something we thought would happen. So I think it goes back to your point initially of a coach or a school saying, okay, we're just going to let someone try out for the team just mm-hmm. because that's important to do, and then realizing, why weren't we doing this before? This is like an asset to our team.
Absolutely. Well, the season for inclusive sports tends to look like what, Nathan?
So we are blessed to have a partnership with the New York State Public High School Athletic Association, and they have been instrumental in raising our credibility as a sports organization in the state of New York. So through their leadership, they've adopted this program as one of their official programs. So much like high school, varsity, junior varsity, modified sports, Unified is a recognized program mm-hmm. of the Public High School Athletic Association. And so we follow their standards in terms of what a season should look like. So we do unified basketball as a spring season sport because we know that schools have excessive demands upon facility space throughout the cold, barren winter that we experience here in New York. So we moved it to a spring season sport to remove that conflict. But teams typically practice for about a month and then have preseason scrimmage dates. In that time, we can see if there's any great disparity in the schedule where we have a very high level ability team going to play a very low ability level team, because that's just not going to benefit either of those schools or either of those programs. So might take corrective action to the schedule. Typically schools are playing 6 to 7 games. So home and away games, riding the bus to the visiting school. And then at the end of we kind of have a little bit different thing that we do in this section as compared to other other sections. In other sections, we create postseason divisions based upon ability, and then they'll play a semifinal round and then a championship or consolation game. Here we have a culminating celebration, so every school is matched up against one opponent for a final game, and then we recognize all of the members of the teams. So to Dr. Myers brought up this idea of student leadership as well, so I'd like to kind of add a little piece about that. Within the Unified Champion School model, a huge part of what this program is inclusive youth leadership in addition to inclusive sports. So we provide training, we provide materials and campaigns for students to work on school climate year-round. So whether that is things like the Spread the Word to End the Word campaign, mm-hmm. Which is about eradicating specific language from people's vocabulary, or whether it is about having more inclusive cafeterias where no student sits alone. Mm-hmm. We provide training to students to be able to implement these things, and then we have an annual summit where we bring these student leaders together and they share best practices. They share their ideas as to how to create greater inclusion in their schools.
Yeah, I think what Nathan and what Kyle and all of our guests have sort of touched on, and we're going to talk more about in our second half hour, is, you know, we could just talk about the athletic piece, which is important, but these are big picture issues that affect the culture of a school. In our second half hour, I'm going to ask Nathan to talk a little bit about how the beneficiaries of this are not just students with disabilities, and that is probably vital for schools that might be a little resistant in changing or adopting these kind of programs and understanding that this isn't just about maybe a smaller portion of your student population benefiting. It's about everybody benefiting. And there is also important work to be done in understanding what fitness programming year-round looks like and how that benefits long-term. Again, not just in a sports season, not just in that moment. But before we kind of go there, I want to ask Jacob, as an athlete who got to play basketball, you seem like someone who took a lot of pride in your school, mm-hmm. and you know, you watched athletics, you probably watched a lot of the other sports that the students played. What did it mean to you to get on the court and rep Brockport and get a chance to play?
Basically, basketball is like my life. So basically, Todd Haygreen, like I was telling you before, he was talking about the Unified Sports Team, which I can join. So basically, Unified basically helped me out creating as a family and a community, mm-hmm. and basically people coming to support the basketball team. And it was a great opportunity for me to play on the court and be the starter and be a great shooter for Brockport and winning games and trying to win for the team, you know, so...
You said the word family. Did it feel like a family?
It felt like a family, yes. Because a family to me felt like it was more like emotional and more important for me to be a part of a family. So it's like a family to me. We all get together. We all have like dinner together. It's like that. It's like Thanksgiving. So
that's awesome. It's just so great to hear that. And everything Jacob's describing, anybody who's played high school athletics, that's exactly the structure of it. You know, mm-hmm. you probably the goal is to have that sort of a family feel, because you're going to be doing a lot together. You're going to be practicing together. You're going to be traveling together. You're on the court together. You're supporting one another. That's great stuff. How much basketball do you play these days, by the way?
Now since I'm graduated, I play at the Brockport College Circle attend with the college kids. So basically, yeah. I got a membership there, and it's a wonderful feeling because I get to play with the college kids. They all love me, and and I always go to the Brockport middle school to watch the basketball players play.
That's great.
And I go to all their games, their away games, their home games, every year. And all the Brockport kids know me. And
you still play through our Special Olympics community-based program too, right? So what other sports beside basketball have you continued on to play?
I do softball for Special Olympics. I do golf, and I think basketball, golf, softball, and that's pretty much it.
Floor hockey, too.
Nathan's got your list there. That's great.
Yeah, Jeffy's good.
That's really great stuff, Jacob. And I'm glad you're staying sharp with your game, because as you get older, I'm going to give you a little preview. I may be old, but I am slow, and I have no left hand. Stay sharp, man.
Well, basically, I got to tell you this. For Unified Sports, the whole crowd was cheering me on. And they all love me. And every time I made that 3-point shot, everyone was going berserk and crazy.
How does that even feel? Because I actually didn't make the basketball team in high school. Well, what What does it feel like to knock one down and people are going crazy?
You know, I remember this one time I shot the ball from the right side, you know, if you like the arc, the right-hand corner of the arc. And basically, I was jumping up and down, going like this, swinging my arms around. And basically, I was looking at Leslie, and she was laughing. She hit me a high five. And it was a great feeling, and I was crying because it was so emotional, mm-hmm. and we almost won. My last game for Brockport was a great moment because the ending was like I was playing defense against this one guy from Gates Chilai, and he was so good. He was dribbling like James Harden, and so basically it's kind of funny at the same time. But he was trying to dribble. I always steal the ball for Brockport. I'm like the stealer for Brockport. So basically I was trying to steal the ball from him. I had intentionally foul him for some odd reason to stop the clock.
Yep.
And so they passed the ball onto him again. And I tried to steal the ball from him, so I took the ball from him, shot it, and I missed it. And basically, that's how it ended the game. So I forgot the score was, but it was emotional. So
it was very close.
It was very close.
That is intense, really intense. Dr. Myers, he was such a star. He's on a first name basis with you.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I didn't miss a game.
I love it. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come back and we'll talk about the impact on an entire school ecosystem, not just for the students who are going to be involved in inclusive athletics. And let's talk about what fitness programming looks like for districts year-round and the benefits that has, yes, in those weeks and months, but also long-term. Kyle Washburn is going to help us understand that. He's the Director of Fitness for Special Olympics International. They're in Rochester this week. They're helping schools get up to speed on the need, the value for these kinds of programs, and yes, the federal regulations that say you got to do it. I think more schools are saying we want to do it. We see the value. So let's get that break. We'll come right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, members of City Council and the local community are starting a survey. They want to know how Rochesterians feel about what tends to happen after the Puerto Rican Festival and how they can make it more peaceful, more organized, better for everyone. We'll talk about it. Then in our second hour, a conversation about preservation when it gets in the way of progress. We'll discuss on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. During our brief break, Jacob was asking me if I was, you know, how familiar I was with LeBron James. I said, I'm from Cleveland. I'm very familiar with not just LeBron James, but Phil Hubbard and Dinner Bell Mel Turpin and all the 1980s of you know, a lot of losing. Yeah, that was the nickname, Nathan.
I'm taking it back.
I was baptized in the ELO. I had a dog named ELO. So, yes, I'm familiar with Cleveland Cavaliers basketball, and Jacob is very, very familiar as well. And you said you wanted to, before we continue, shout out to a few folks. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to shout out to my grandfather, Clarence, my mom, all my aunts, my cousins, and my Brockport community. And Leslie, my favorite person. And it's a great opportunity to be here in the show. So.
Well, I know they're proud of you and the work that you're doing, that you did for your school, that you're doing for Special Olympics. And listeners, this hour, it's a chance to understand exactly the value of inclusive programming that, if you missed the beginning of the program, you go back to January 2013 and the U.S. Department of Education issued a directive for student athletes with disabilities, which is a moment that the Washington Post said would stand alongside Title IX in terms of inclusive athletics. Now, that doesn't mean every school approaches it the same way. And so Special Olympics is here in Rochester. They're working with coaches. They're working with administrators. They're working with school districts to help them understand what this programming ought to look like, what the benefits are. And I want to ask Nathan Johnson and Kyle Washburn to tell us a little bit more about the concept here that, you know, this is not just for the student athletes, students like Jacob. This is for everyone in a school ecosystem, isn't it? Where do you see the benefits?
Yes, absolutely. So I think that was one of the, not really surprises, but one of the things that we weren't sure how deep that impact was going to be. So Special Olympics, this is our 50th anniversary as a global organization, and we are predominantly a volunteer-supported organization. And so for every paid staff member, you know, there's 500 volunteers who are just, you know, pushing this movement forward. And being a volunteer organization, we rely upon continual recruitment, continual education, new stakeholder development. And so this work within the schools has had this impact of kids getting an initial exposure to disability awareness, disability advocacy, inclusive programming, inclusive opportunities. And these young minds are so much more likely to melt away stereotype and stigma much quicker. So the number of students who say, you know, I've given consideration to what I want to go to college for, and I think I want to go and be an occupational therapist or a physical therapist, or I want to go into special education. We hear about these stories every single day where young people are feeling a connection to not just Special Olympics, but really the mission and the goal of creating a more inclusive society.
Hmm. How do you view this, Kyle? How do you view the impact on an entire school community?
So Special Olympics is really moving in the next 50 years to on the inclusion revolution and looking at changing systems. And if we look at one of those systems as being schools, we think about what can we do in the work with our youth and with administrators and principals. And to really change that culture to make inclusion a dominant part of what they do, there's got to be benefits for the entire ecosystem. So it's not just, okay, this is something that's nice and good to do for an individual with an intellectual disability. Well, what accomplishments will we achieve for a person without an intellectual disability? What will be the advantages to the teachers and everyone involved? And so we've done fitness programming and health and wellness programming in and out of schools. And when we think about what's going on inside the schools, we create different models and resources that an athlete, a person with an intellectual disability, can be a leader with, that a youth without an intellectual disability, a teacher, administrator, can take a Fit 5 resource, which is a guide about physical activity, nutrition, and hydration, and key steps about how you incorporate that into the school environment and you ensure that everybody has a role in that, whether it's the sport experience. So your practices, your competitions are inclusive, so that your pep rallies are. If you're doing a fundraiser to raise money, that everybody's involved. And so as individuals in schools have been doing fitness programming, we're collecting data. We want to make sure that we're actually having an impact on that. And so as we've done that, we've made positive results and outcomes for everyone across the board. So if we look at health outcomes, we see that there's more minutes of physical activity, which we know translates into less absenteeism with school, more higher morale. We actually see slight modifications in body mass index or weight. We see changes to hypertensive to normotensive levels. We see changes in attitudes towards each other. We see improvements in health all the way around and social and emotional wellness. And so when an administrator or principal sees something that says, this is not something where we're just doing it as a nice one-off for an individual with ID or for a subset of our athletes or our communities or people in our schools, that it actually has a positive culture change for the entire environment, that's when it really starts to take hold. And if you can do that with youth, as Nathan was sharing, we're starting at such a young age, and it just all of this becomes mainstream throughout the course of life when we're talking about education, employment, and basic human rights.
Dr. Myers, what impact have you seen in Brockport?
Sure. I'll share what one of our coaches shared with me, Betsy Fitzpatrick. She said, I watched true friendships develop and last long after the season. When I attended graduation parties for some, most of the team would be there. They text each other, went bowling, went to Taco Bell, and did things that teammates and friends do. They truly enjoyed spending time with each other and brought the best in each other out. I've always considered Brockport to be a leading example of an inclusive community, and Unified Sports has highlighted this and served to increase our momentum. One of the things that we do is we hold an end-of-year banquet, and Jacob has attended. And I will tell you, there are lots of sports in Brockport. It's the only sport that I attend the banquet every year. And to see the power, they each come up and they are given an award. And the coach describes how they contributed to the team. These banquets are so incredibly powerful. Just the friendships that have developed, some things that they learned about each other. And just to see the parents in the audience, they're tearing up because they're so proud of their child. But it also, again, has transformed some of the adults who are involved. I mean, because there is a stigma that does exist, whether we want to admit it or not, when it comes to, in this case, students with intellectual disabilities. And the fact that each time, not only have our students risen to the occasion, they go above and beyond. And the camaraderie, the way that they represent our school and our district. I mean, we are known for being one of the leading unified sports teams. It has transformed the way that we do business in Brockport.
Mm. Do you remember any of the banquets, Jacob?
Yes. I remember going to this one banquet where they had like those, I forgot what it's called, like they had those paper plates and like they write stuff down for the teammates. Mm-hmm. And like what they do is at the end of the banquet, they call out like my name. They called out my name because I'm a 3-point shooter. King, I'm a king.
You see how he reiterates that? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just reminding me.
I can't tell if he was a 3-point shooter.
So basically, they have a marker in their hand and they write down what are we accomplished. Mm-hmm. And for the banquet, so basically they call out like their names like one at a time, say like Jacob or Babcock, come up to the table please, and like they all cheered on and they said great job, they gave me a handshake, high five, and it was a great opportunity.
So. You enjoy the experience?
Oh my gosh, it was great. Yes.
Yeah.
They always put together a PowerPoint presentation, and we have a great video that we created too that outlines the experience and the impact.
I think, you know, going back to Kyle's point, you know, when the way this can hit a school culture, especially at a young age, on this program throughout the year, we have a lot of discussion about the way inequality works in our society and who benefits and who is disadvantaged by inequalities. And the host of this program, the opinions of the host aren't really sort of really relevant, and I try not to inject myself too much, though some listeners probably think it's too much. But I will say that one of the values of this program is a true belief that it is better for all of us to be spending as much time as we can among those who are not exactly like us, and that when we sort of self-segregate, self-sort, that there is a cost to that. And I think just going back to my own camp counselor experience days and the way we used to segregate populations of campers and the way that changed over time and seeing the impact on campers. This to me, Kyle, seems like a way to continue to build a healthier society starting early. I mean, we've talked a lot about high school, a little bit about middle school, but how young are we talking about fitness programming year round and thinking about that in the school setting for kids with intellectual disabilities?
So we've looked at fitness data and health outcomes across the lifespan to really understand, and this has been done for the general population. Mm-hmm. It's not often done for individuals with intellectual disabilities, and so we're trying to get some more of that information. But a lot of the leading organizations, from the Centers for Disease Control to the American College of Sports Medicine, recommend physical activity for individuals all the way down from young children. There was a recent, the new guidelines were set out. They've been similar to what they have been always about the amount of physical activity we should be getting. And it's important to do that to create lifelong behaviors for anyone. And to your point about including people with and without disabilities together, or people in general coming together, we think about Special Olympics initially started as traditional sports. And when we say traditional, it was just for people with intellectual disabilities to compete against people with intellectual disabilities. And we've been pushing for a long time to change our own culture towards this unified and seeing what the real power of that is, that when you bring people together of different abilities, you achieve so much more. You change the culture. You change the fabric of an institution, of schools, of a community, of a culture, of a society, of a nation. And we want to start at a young age. And to your point earlier about the number of unified champion schools in New York being about 140, well over 90% of those are in high schools. And there are a few that are in middle schools, and I believe there are none right now in elementary schools. But that's not the case across the nation. And we're trying to create, through Unified Champion Schools, more resources to support Unified Champion Schools at a young age, to support the community in elementary schools so that they can do that. Some of those exist. We're trying to enhance that even more and share best practices. There's a lot to learn from the successes of New York and the stories that we're hearing here and sharing those back and forth with different states.
How does New York State compare to other states?
So overall, we have 6,500 total unified champion schools across the state. So I mean, if you look at 50, it's.
And what's the short definition for listeners who are hearing that term? It technically means what?
So a unified champion school, there's different criteria to actually achieve that. There's three main components, and one is whole school engagement, which is an opportunity for everyone in the school to be involved. It could be a pep rally, the R Word campaign, and the word to spread the word, where everybody gets a chance to be involved, people with and without disabilities, as well as the school administration. Then there's the unified sports component, which Jacob's been talking about, is participation in the basketball team. So there needs to be a sporting experience where people with and without ID come together, and it's ingrained in the sport, and not just, okay, just this. The idea is not to just have one sport, one opportunity, one season, you're one and done. We would like this to be happening in all seasons of sports. And the third component is inclusive youth leadership, where think about school clubs when we were students. There's leaders, people that step up, but we want to make sure that people with an intellectual disability have a voice, that they're participating in coming up with ideas for clubs, for the pep rallies, for the fundraisers, and being not only advocates for themselves, but changing that culture. So those are the components to become a unified champion schools. And all states are at different levels of being able to achieve that. And so one of our goals with the conference here and conversations, and Nathan can speak more to it about this, is there's also a national banner recognition program, which is sort of that next step. We'd like schools to basically achieve in those three areas to become a unified champion school, but then there's 10 criteria to really be recognized as the cream of the crop.
You want to add to that, Nathan? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So that's a huge part of our meeting this afternoon, as we're talking about this banner recognition program. And so 10 standards have been developed in those three different component area, so inclusive sports, inclusive youth leadership, and whole school engagement. And the standards that have been developed measure the ongoing activity. So is, as Kyle had said, we don't want a single day experience and then everybody says, hey, that was our inclusion day and let's go back to normal business. Mm-hmm. We wanted measurements of a school putting significant energy and investment into creating ongoing school inclusive culture. And so the standards gauge the temperature of the school.
The reason I'm asking how New York State is doing is because culture changes not overnight, and it changes with time and understanding and experience and communication. So that's part of what's happening right now. But for our listeners who would like their own district and their own schools to achieve these distinctions now, what's a good way to advocate? What do you want parents to do? What do you want students to do? What do you want community members to do to get their own districts on the... You got a smile on your face there, Kyle. I mean,
There's so much that we want them to do, right? It's really about meeting them where they're at. So we try and create flexibility with any of the programming and the opportunities. You know, we want the parents and the students to be coming up with the ideas that are going to resonate in their own community. So we don't want to be so prescriptive, like you need to do A, B, and C, and X, Y, and Z, because we're not there at the local level, especially myself sitting on an international headquarters. We can look at best practices across the board and share those. But it's really, I think, when I look around this room right here and the experts here about Special Olympics New York and the community and the schools that are here, you know, they have that day-to-day experience. And so I would sort of defer to them to share what would work best here in New York as opposed to me sharing kind of what works on a national level.
My guess is they appreciate that flexibility that says that allows some autonomy at the local level as long as, you know, the mission is the same. And so, Nathan, what do you want, you know, parents, listeners to think about if they would like their own school districts to be able to achieve these distinctions?
Well, I think that the first thing is having this conversation today is great, but please come out and see what the activity looks like. So when we get into that season in the end of April, May, if you're in a community and your school doesn't have inclusive unified programming, come to a game. See what it's about, feel the atmosphere in that gym, and then I think it makes it easier for a parent to advocate that their school should adopt it. I think that for if a your audience member is a teacher or an administrator at a school, talk to those schools that have it, talk to the teachers who are involved with the program, talk to the administrators who have helped bring this programming to their school about what the impacts are on a day-to-day basis. I think that there's always the concern about what is this going to cost? What's the bottom line? You know, what's the expectation for the long term? But what we typically hear, whether it's from superintendents or principals or athletic directors, is the minute this becomes ingrained in their school, there is no way they will ever let it disappear.
I love it. If you can find Unified, and you can, Unified Athletics, go to a game. Check it out. Mm-hmm. You'll probably enjoy it. You might see athletes like Jacob who are putting on a great show, and then you can have a conversation. So 30 seconds, Dr. Myers, for your fellow administrators who don't quite have the level that Brockport has, what's the kind of message you want to leave with them?
Why aren't you doing it? It really has, again, transformed our school community. We have support from the Board of Education. Jacob has mentioned Todd Haygreen. He's our athletic director. He's all in. I'm all in. Our high school principal and all of our principals are all in. Our PTSA is in. And our students are all in. And our student athletes are all in. If we talk about the fact that education is supposed to make sure that we include every child, then we need to make sure that every child feels included, loved, respected, and a part of the school community.
Dr. Myers, the superintendent of the Brockport Central School District, it's always nice to see you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
I am not surprised that they brought Dr. Myers and Brockport on the list of schools that are doing it the way they would love to see more schools do it. Nathan Johnson, Senior Director of Programs for Unified Sports for Special Olympics New York, good luck to you. Thanks for sharing this story with our listeners today.
Thanks so much for the time, Evan.
It's been great to have Kyle Washburn, Director of Fitness for Special Olympics International. Nice having you in Rochester. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Thank you. It's been great.
And Jacob Boer Babcock. See you on a basketball court someday, my friend.
Thank you.
You got it. Thanks for sharing your stories. Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.